This is the Multi-Faith Matters Podcast. I'm your host, John Morgan.
Well, welcome to the video podcast for Multi-Faith Matters. I'm John Moorhead, the director of the organization, and we've got a couple of special guests today that I will introduce in just a moment, but I wanted to say a few words to kind of set the context for our conversation. Religious switching is the phenomenon that takes place when people are raised or they convert into a religious tradition, and then later on in life, for whatever reason, they decide to find another religious pathway. That is going up, according to the Pew Forum. Perhaps as many as 42% of people are engaged in that process of switching. We also know that interfaith marriages are on the increase. So increasingly in America and around the world, people are trying to navigate interfaith relationships. What does it mean when somebody that you care for and love is in another religious tradition, and particularly when they switch? Perhaps you raise them in a particular religion, and then they make the decision they want to go another way. That can be a difficult topic to navigate. And so we're going to talk to a couple of ladies today who have continued to work through that process. I'm going to give you a little, here's the great book that I ran across and had the privilege to edit for the Englewood Review called Undivided, A Muslim Daughter, Her Christian Mother, Their Path to Peace. And my guests are Patricia Raybon and Alana Raybon. Ladies, would you like to introduce yourselves and say a little bit more about your background?
Sure. You can start, Alana.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me on the program, John. As you mentioned, my name is Alana, and I am a mother of three and a teacher for the past 15 years. I am now an instructional coach at a school in Denver.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And Alana is my youngest daughter. I'm her mother, Patricia Raybon. I'm a journalist, John, I think. So for that reason alone, I'm honored to be here with you for this conversation. And I have an older daughter. My husband and I raised both of our daughters in the church of our birth, which is the church Christianity. And then Alana and I experienced this split that you're talking about, with her making a choice to convert to Islam. And so that's the journey that we've been on. And we're both honored today to talk to you and to your guest about our experience.
Yeah, well, of course, the stakes are high for everybody involved, but to kind of let people know an additional level of what was at stake for you, Patricia, you aren't just a Christian mom. You have a profile within Christianity. You're a Christian author and speaker. Is that correct?
Well, it's interesting. I thought of myself mostly as a news journalist, and then I taught journalism at the University of Colorado for 16 years after leaving newspaper journalism for a dozen years. And it was Alana's faith choice that took me into Christian publishing. I, as a writer, looked for ways to explore what was happening in our own home and in our own family, and increasingly found outlets to share my story with Christian magazines, and then ultimately blogs and then books. And so the irony, John, is I'm not sure I would be known as a Christian author. I am a Christian person, but mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'd be known as a Christian author if I hadn't experienced this shift in our own family and needed a way to think about it. Mm. So you never know where God's going to send you, and that's what happened to me.
That's right. That's right. Alana, let's talk a little little bit about your experience. How did you come to experience a dissatisfaction with the Christianity that you grew up with and that your mom hoped that you would continue to embrace and then make that shift to embracing Islam?
Sure. Well, I wasn't really dissatisfied with Christianity. I just didn't actually fully accept the belief system. As a child, I really loved my church. It was really a welcoming place. It was full of people that were really loving. They just, it was like family. But when I was a kid, I just couldn't really grasp or understand the Trinity. So it was mostly the Trinity. I believed in God. I believed that there is a heaven. I believed in the books. But I couldn't understand the Trinity. And so as I got older, that dilemma became more important to me. And so I just decided to start exploring. And I didn't really look very far. I learned about Islam through some people that I knew in Colorado. I was exposed to different forms of it. I met some Orthodox Muslims when I was going to school, when I was getting my bachelor's degree. And I started to read the Quran. I was reading the Bible. But I was just really looking for fulfillment. And again, I always believed in God. And so I found that fulfillment in Islam. I found something that I didn't really feel like I was getting when I was going to church and following the Christian tradition.
Patricia, what was it like? I'm sure you both remember. What was it like that day? Or maybe it was, I don't know, what was the process of revelation like when she came to you and told you that she had decided to follow this separate spiritual pathway?
Well, the thing that I didn't understand that was happening was that she was making a choice that I didn't know how to argue against. I mean, many of us are believers, but we're not necessarily trained apologists or theologians. And that's certainly true of me. I love the Lord. I've been in church my entire life, but I wasn't trained or prepared to make a case for Christ as just an ordinary mom. And so what we did was a lot of arguing. Mm-hmm. In my heart, I believed she was making a mistake. And I was frustrated that I couldn't argue her back to Jesus. And then the other thing that surprised me, and I learned later as Alana and I wrote our book together, is that parents invest a lot of energy into conveying our values to our children, you know, when they're younger, believing that they'll hold on to them. And that wasn't happening. So I felt like a failure. I felt as a Christian mother, like a total failure, that I had failed in the role of passing on my faith and my values, and that I had failed Christ. And so there is a lot of baggage in the room. Yeah. And you can imagine my kitchen was the site of a lot of battles, you know, as you're sitting around the kitchen table or, you know, trying to reconcile this shift that's happening in your life that you can't control.
Mm-hmm.
So for people in your audience who are struggling with that, I can totally relate to the struggle of it and the frustration of it.
That that response really sets the tone for the next question I have for you. And what were those early disagreements and interactions like? Did you both, and this is a question for both of you to respond to, did you both feel as if you had to, that an argument was necessary? You had to use apologetics, defend your faith? You were trying to pull the other your direction? What was that like?
For me, I felt like my decision was being attacked. And of course, it wasn't accepted. So I immediately went into defensive mode and felt the need to prove my case. And I spent a lot of time and energy on that path, which eventually became really exhausting. And I tired of that I wouldn't say quickly, but eventually tired of that approach, and then just kind of sort of gave up in the pursuit of convincing my mother not only to accept my choice, but also to sort of give me the freedom to have that choice. It just became so exhausting. So I avoided conflict altogether, eventually, just avoided conversations about faith altogether. We started talking about superficial things like the weather, the kids, you know, all the things that you could safely discuss without getting into a faith battle. Unfortunately, what happened was we developed a divide, sort of like an expanse between us that was, there was always like an awkward feeling if something religious would come up, like if I would pray in her presence or in public when we were together, then those feelings would come up again. So we were just both really struggling, and we didn't really know how to approach the situation because it was new for both of us.
And the other part of it, you know, we're an African American family, and I have spent most of my life in Colorado, and so I grew up being an outsider. Even today, Colorado is still mostly white state, and so I grew up with being stared at in public, and you know, people acting as if our family was, you know, unusual, or you know, if we went to a picnic in the mountains or something, and got out of our car, and all the people there, the white people, would stare, and sometimes they would get in their cars and leave. And so a lot of that had over the years started to recede, and then Alana converted and started wearing hijab. And here we were in the same situation everywhere we went in public. People were staring. And then if she and her husband did something overtly Muslim, such as putting down their prayer rugs to pray, then we would experience that same kind of feeling of people looking on us as if we were, you know, just unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were so there was the faith layer, there was the race layer for me, and then, you know, just the experience that we have in it, that you have in a multiracial, multi-faith world, of being the other. And then we had the struggle as mother and daughter of how to get along. And, you know, John, in the Christian world, that's when you give it to God, because, you know, you can't handle it yourself. And that's certainly what I believe I did when I reached out to Lana and asked her to, if she would join me in writing about what we were experiencing, because I, on my own, I just could not figure out a way to get, if there was a light at the end of the tunnel, I could not on my own figure out how to get there.
Well, there were a number of things that stood out for me in reading your book and your story. My background years ago was in apologetics. I worked in with people in new religious movements like Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses. And my understanding years ago was the best way to get people to change their mind was to use a series of apologetic arguments and tell them that their views weren't biblical, and somehow they were supposed to have a change of heart and want to embrace the Christian message. I came to discover after years of trying this that, in my view, it's largely ineffective. I'm hearing, Patricia, from you that you tried apologetics and arguments, and Alana is feeling rejected, and you both had this defensive approach early on. Did you finally get to the point where we've got to do something different?
Yes. After 10 years of, you know, having this elephant in the room, You can imagine with families at Thanksgiving or something have a topic that everybody's avoiding. You know it's there, but it's just awkwardly being avoided. And that's what we did for a long time, to the point that it was hurtful. It was the relationship was suffering because of the strain of it all. And we had to do something different. And for me, that difference would come in writing. Most families won't sit down and write a book. I understand that. But certainly, both parties have to decide, let's try a new way. And that's what we agreed to do.
Yeah, and I think we also decided to take on a serious endeavor. And so in our case, it was writing about it, because that felt official. Like, we were finally ready to really dig into this issue. And so us writing about it just made it more official. So we both couldn't back down, because we agreed to do this project. And I think initially it really was just for us. You know, we weren't really thinking about who would connect with our journey. At least I wasn't really at first. I wasn't thinking that broadly. I was just thinking that this was mom's way of communicating. She's always communicated this way. Through her books, I've learned a lot about her that I didn't already know. And so I heard when she said, do you want to write? I heard, do you want to talk? And so then I couldn't back down from that. I had to be mature enough to say, yes, I'm ready now. And I was ready, because I had avoided it for so long. I had calmed down and I had become less angry at her and less combative. And more willing to listen. So it happened at the right moment, and it was an extremely therapeutic process.
So do you think during that writing process, you were both able to not only understand each other better, but maybe understand yourselves a little bit better as to where you were coming from in this?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was sort of a combination of journaling and self-reflection and self-exploration, and then also this other process of just developing a deeper level of empathy for the other person's experience that I don't think could have ever happened if we hadn't been basically forced to listen to the other person's point of view. So every time we would write a chapter, we would send it to each other, because we would then respond. And so for me, it was liberating to know that mom had to read everything that I said and really take it all in her own time. And I also felt just really enlightened reading her words, because I had to silence myself while I was listening as I was reading, and just think about her experience. And so through that process, I think I developed a much deeper understanding of her belief and an appreciation of her belief that I never would have developed if I hadn't really asked myself to be that patient and to listen in that way.
Yeah, I was surprised also by the power of being quiet and hearing the other person, because typically, you know, when people are arguing, they're not at all listening to what the other person says. But the even bigger revelation, if I may call it, for me, John, was the new things that I learned about my faith. And it came pretty early, because at some point in the opening chapters, Alana wrote something about me never listening to her, but never asking her questions. Going back, she at that point was reflecting back to her childhood and essentially said, "You never ask me what I thought." And so as soon as she said that, you know, exactly what I was reminded of, the questions of Jesus and how many questions, how he, in the course of healing others, asked questions. Who touched me? You know, with the woman with the issue of blood, mm-hmm. and the man at the pool of Bethesda. Don't you want to be healed? Or to the people who were blind, can you see anything? And I was reading the other day about the demoniac who Jesus asked him, what is your name? And you remember, and he said, my name is Legion. You know, because he was so overwhelmed with all of these spirits attacking him. And so our interaction not only helped me to understand what Alana was trying to say to me, but understand what the Lord was trying to say to me in terms of our healing and in terms of what he was asking me to be as her mother. And it was life-changing for me. It completely changed the way I communicate, not only with Alana, but with everybody else. Oh, I need to not talk, but ask in the way that Jesus asked. And at that point, I got really excited about what I believe God was inviting us to do in this work. And so for your viewers, as they find themselves in these multi-faith, or interracial multi-faith situations, if they can find a way to quiet their own anxiety or anger or need to fix people or change them, and instead move to a higher level and to see what God is inviting them to be taught, then everything changes. And it's, I think what changes is what our world needs, is for people to learn how to get along, how to love one another.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that feeds into the last question I have for you, unless you have a few other things you'd like to say after that. We've got You folks are not alone. You know, we said at the beginning when I introduced this topic that increasingly people are changing religions. One of the greatest growing demographics is the nuns, people who were raised in a religious tradition, usually Christianity, and now they opt for not being affiliated with institutional religion. And yeah. Many times they create their own kind of cafeteria, smorgasbord, individualized spirituality, or they're opting for choosing another traditional religion. You got marriages where people have spouses that now don't share their faith. And as a result, we feel defensive. We're trying to protect our identity. We're trying to protect the religion we hold dear, and we end up in conflict. What advice would both of you, having gone through this and continuing to navigate your relationship, what advice would you give to people who are in a similar situation?
I think I would say to find a way to appreciate the person's personal spiritual walk, even if you don't understand it yourself, or if you don't accept it or don't believe in it, but just appreciate that everyone has the right to find themselves and find their journey and find God. And that might not look like the way that you would find God, but that still doesn't negate their right to that experience. And I think that that was the hardest thing for me to try to convey during this process that we went through, was that I have a right to find my spiritual path. And so now, as a mother of three, and I have children who are, again, in an interfaith family, because they come to grandma's house and they see all of the things and they know that we are different. They ask a lot of questions. And so I'm trying my best, even though it's very hard, I am trying to accept their questions and accept what they're thinking, and also try to encourage them to find their way, I don't think I would have that much of an open mind if I had not gone through it myself. Mm-hmm. And so I would say the most important thing is to find a way to appreciate the experiences of others and honor their right to develop their own personal journey.
Yeah, I would, I agree with that. And the word that I use, John, is respect. That ultimately is what was what Alana was asking from me. And, you know, the Latin meaning of that is to look again, to see again. And so as I looked again at Alana, I saw, oh my goodness, here's an amazing young woman who's an amazing teacher and educator, a wonderful mother, a great wife, a good citizen, innovative employee, all these things that I had forgotten to see because I was stuck on the faith, on that faith piece. And so as I could see the ways to respect Alana, I realized I needed to respect her right to make her own choice, and then trust that God would work out the rest of it. And so, you know, that means in a practical way, means at Christmas time, for example, I could have the biggest tree in the world, because my mother was born the day after Christmas, and Christmas was a big holiday in my home as a child. I did put up Christmas trees. Did I have two trees?
Yeah,
two trees, two little, but they were little ones. And I did share gifts, but Alana and her family choose not to come over on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, that really hurt me. But my husband and I have found other ways to enjoy that holiday. It's one day out of the year. And, you know, people, we can get stuck on one thing and ruin a lot. And so I release that day to the Lord and respect Alana's right to not try to celebrate it with us. And then we pick up the day after and move on. And so is our solution perfect or the best? We're still on the journey. I would say it this way, John, praise God, we are still on the journey. We haven't cut one another off. And so I would ask your listeners and viewers to keep working at it. Don't cut off anybody who's part of your family circle or your life. God's with you, and keep at it, and keep learning, and keep loving. More than all, keep loving.
Yeah. Well, I think that's also one other side of this, is that, as Mom was saying, so much of this process has been really painful. And so I think the listeners also need to have be sensitive to your loved one's experience. This is going to be hard for them. It's going to hurt. And so instead of getting angry at the other person for being mad or angry or sad, try to understand, try to be sensitive to that person's feelings. Consider how difficult the process is for them as well. And also to assume the best. You know, I at first was really angry with Mom, and then I had to realize that as a mother, she was really struggling, and I had to be sensitive to that, and I had to care about her feelings. And once I was able to release my anger and start to really see her as a human being with feelings, I was able to become more sensitive to the struggles that she was having, and more careful in the way that I approached the decisions that we made that would impact her experience, such as Christmas Day and things like that.
Yes. And trust God is still God, and it's still at work. And I don't have to be God in this situation. God is already being God in it.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful advice from both of you. I just want to clarify for our listeners, and I think I'm hearing this from both of you. What you're not saying is that you both have decided that your views on Christianity, on the one hand, Patricia, and yours, Alana, of Islam, on the other, those views don't matter, and we're just going to work through this. You really do value your religious traditions. You have strong disagreements, and you haven't surrendered any of that. But what you've done is find a way to navigate that in respectful ways that are sensitive to each other, and to hold those disagreements in a peaceful tension for the betterment of yourselves and the community and family that you live in. Is that correct?
Yes, that was well said.
What we're trying to do here at Multi-Faith Matters, we're not interfaith. In the interfaith sometimes says, you know what, religious differences don't matter. Let's just focus on what we have in common. Or maybe we're all really just saying the same thing in terms of religion, using different ways to talk about it. We don't believe that. We think that religions are different. We have irreconcilable differences, but that doesn't mean we have to treat each other as enemies, that we can work together and treat each other respectfully as we navigate, whether it's a family relationship or what have you, so that we can work for the common good of our society and our country and world. So I think you're contributing to what we're trying to do through this, through your relationship and your conversation today.
Thank you.
Amen to that.
Well, I'm going to include some information about your book in the text that will accompany this podcast, and I encourage folks to purchase the book. And who knows, maybe some folks who are going through similar struggles will reach out and say, give me some more advice. So if you're open to that, I think it would be wonderful. But again, I just want to thank you both for your time in having this conversation with me and with my audience today.
Thanks so much, John.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye.